Good morning. Welcome to the last day of sessions here at EDUCAUSE, and special thank you for coming out so early to join us for what has been one of the hottest topics of the session of the conference this year. And a special welcome also to those of our colleagues who are joining us through the virtual conference. I'm very pleased to introduce to you one of our feature sessions, Learning in the Public Sphere, the Pedagogy of Learning Management Systems and MOOCs. Our presenter this morning is Mike Griffith from Tulane University. He is coordinator of the Faculty Technology Lab. And he'll be speaking for most of the time. There will be some engagement with Twitter, and then we'll have some time at the end to take some additional questions. And I would encourage you, before you leave, to please fill out the evaluation form online for this session. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce Mike so we can get the conversation underway. Mike?
Thank you much. Thank you, Samantha. And thank all of you for getting up after for this last day of EDUCAUSE, rather. And thank you to the online audience for tuning in. I wanted to tell you all a little bit about myself as a way of framing this session. I actually came into academic technology through a long history of engagement with the academy. And as part of that, my background is primarily in cultural theory, studies of the virtual within literature and culture. And so today, what I really want to do is take some of these communications theories. I'm still an adjunct professor for English and communications, and sort of apply these to the public spaces and learning environments that we've been developing through our learning management systems, and then in the last couple of years through this MOOC movement. Also, we'll be employing some strategies today through scraping some information out of Twitter. I've created some custom hashtags, and so please, those of you here, those of you at home or remote, feel free to join in. And in fact, I'm going to throw the first one up now. Describe your LMS in one word other than its name to hashtag EDULMS. Please keep it clean. Just give us one thought. You know, what is the first thing that comes to mind when you think about your LMS? And so while folks are choosing their word, again, that's EDULMS, let's talk a little bit about the public sphere. The public sphere is a theory that came into prominence through the work of Habermas and through the work of Caspar Hauer. And we see here in this first quote, the public sphere is a separate realm from the state, the formal economy, and the family. Private interests, such as monetary gain and state interests in the administration and order narrowly constructed, are not the primary concerns of the public sphere. In the public sphere, private individuals, rather than agents of the state, come together to participate as citizens. And Habermas's ideas were fairly revolutionary. He says there was something about the Industrial Revolution that brought the interests of the individual out of the home and actually into the public eye. We began to see more community engagement. We began to see the emergence of things like the public commons. And there's been a lot of work over the last few years talking about the public sphere in terms of internet spaces, in terms of web spaces. And what's interesting is we've seen such a proliferation of these spaces that it's become hard to define once again, what a public sphere might be in terms of technology. Is this a public sphere? You know, here we have some footage from a Halo game. And we're talking about various media here. So we have the first layer of media would be the game itself. The second sphere would actually be the massive online game that's being played here. The third level of this is going to be the YouTube comments, which is where I got this video in the first place. We can keep going. We can talk about the Metacritic reviews of the site. We can talk about gamer communities and so forth. So there is a proliferation of discourse, but there's also a fragmentation of discourse as well. And I think this is something that we are certainly facing in the academy. So what we end up with is a realm of various publics. We have various public spheres competing for legitimacy and resources, both material and discursive, that will allow them to organize, appear in the wider public, and make claims of or resist the dominant public and the state. And this is Elizabeth Breeze sort of recently developing the works of Habermas. And Habermas himself is still actually talking about this. He says the rise of fragmented chat rooms across the world, it leads to the fragmentation of a large but politically focused mass audience into a huge number of isolated public issues. So in our use of social tools, we're dividing the power of the public sphere, and when we extend this to education, we're reducing the impact of an already divided space. Proliferation of tools, while excellent in terms of pedagogical play, actually serves to dilute the overall development of the public sphere. And it doesn't take much to see how this is occurring within social media as well, right? We have things like Facebook and Twitter, Tumblr, Reddit, Quora, and each one of these sites is serving a specific community, and these sites even have a bit of tension among them, Tumblr versus Facebook, Twitter and Tumblr, Reddit versus everybody, and so it's interesting to see sort of how these are playing out. We have a fracturing of systems. The students in our systems are connected only with their institutional peers, just as individuals in these social networks find themselves limited, not necessarily by the environment, but by the social practice of the environment. All right? And we see this certainly within learning management systems today. All right, so let's take a moment here and check in with our Twitter results. Let's see. So we have and I wanted to show you, this is a great tool when we're talking about being social online. This is a little Google Doc, free and available to use, called Tags. This is version 5 of Tags, which will actually allow you to scrape a series of tweets. So we can go ahead and run this for our current hashtag. And what we're actually going to do is develop an archive of everything that you guys have said about your learning management systems. And we can actually just jump over here to Wordle and then lay it out. Hopefully. There we go. All right, so let's actually go ahead and take a look at that. And so once again, EDUCAUSE wins the day. And actually, this looks like a different Wordle. Let's try this again. Nope. All right, well, let's just go ahead and take a look at this through TweetDeck then. We've got present, inadequate, diverse, evolving, closed, oppressive, clicky, platform, dying dinosaur, underutilized, scorned, limiting, and box. So that gives us a pretty good idea. Well, first of all, that we're all on the same page, so thank you for that, of what we're facing within our learning management environment. And so we have then the idea that within public spheres we also have sort of counterpublics that become available to us. And scholars use the term counterpublics to examine the organization of publics into individuals or groups whose identity, individual and collective, relegates their public appearance and contributions to an inferior position vis-a-vis the wider and dominant public. And we see some very prominent examples of that these days with things like Anonymous, right? Anonymous is a group that has changed the way that we think about technology. It's changed the way that we think about what technology is capable of, but ultimately, they're using the same communication tools that we are, and they're disrupting the conversation as it's occurring. And so this can go back to the concept of the rhizome. This is something that Deleuze and Guattari talk about. I don't want to go into it in detail, but the idea here is that we're using sort of similar platforms, we're using similar tools. We have different methods of engaging, perhaps, with those tools and different means of pulling sort of our social practice out of them. But ultimately, the rhizome allows for a multiple non-hierarchical entry and exit from within a system. And that, that phrase there, multiple non-hierarchical entry and exit from a system, could not be further removed from the way that we think about learning management systems today. Right? And so we can think about this in terms of the actual process of creating communication. We have frameworks of knowledge, relations of production, technical infrastructure, and all of these allow us to actually encode meaning in a basic form of communication, basically to produce what Stuart Hall would call a meaningful discourse. And once we produce what we think is meaningful discourse, we send that meaningful discourse out into the world, and we wait for it to be received, right? And so we wait for it to be decoded. And so we see the same process that we're developing with our students, right? We have certain tools available to us. We know certain things. We're able to put these things together in order to generate content, to generate knowledge for our students. And then we hope that our students are able to decode these messages that we encode for them. But they're going to be decoding based on their own frameworks of knowledge, their own relations of production, their own technical infrastructure. All right, and we see a tremendous disconnect between sort of the larger world of social networking and then the closed world that we've produced within the academy. Interestingly enough, Larry Lessig and his work on Remix has sort of completed Stuart Hall's encoding and decoding model, right? We create some sort of meaningful discourse, it's decoded, and then now we actually have the tools to speak back to that initial act of encoding. Right, so what would an educational public sphere look like? For Habermas, the public sphere is not a domain that facilitates the free exchange of ideas, but is a social space through which norms of communication and interaction are produced. I don't believe we currently have such a structure in education, or if so, it's severely limited. Back to Van Dyck, social media platforms are not inaugurating a public sphere, but they are communicative instruments that formalize and inscribe heretofore informal discourse that was always already part of the public sphere, hence reconfiguring our norms for sociality and social context. All right, so if these platforms are allowing us to formalize social practices as they've already existed, then we need to think about what social practices we are formalizing in the academy through our use of these tools. All right, so this is where things get a little tricky. We need to parse the difference between enacting learning and the public appearance of learning, or in fact, seeming to learn. All right, so let's do another Twitter exercise here. Describe MOOCs in one tweet. Without using massive open online or course, since we know that that's fundamentally part of the description. And our hashtag here is EDUMOOCs. That's EDUMOOCs. And we'll come back to these in a minute. So this is something I like to call the MOOCs believe. If we look at the big three, Coursera, Udacity, and edX, these are all phrases or sentences that were cribbed from the various mission statements of these organizations, right? We believe in connecting people to a great education so that anyone around the world can learn without limits. We believe higher education is a basic human right, and we seek to empower our students to advance their education and careers. We believe, in the highest quality education, both online and in the classroom. So the MOOC providers assure us that they believe in the value of higher education. This is a belief in process, and it's a belief in content. It's a validation of a new medium of education communication through the accepted leadership of an older model. It's a great example of what Marshall McLuhan would call rearview mirrorism, right, where we take the terminology that we use to discuss an old media and we use it to discuss a new medium in its place. Right, and so we're taking a lot of these older ideas about pedagogy, and we're pushing them through into these new technological environments. Again, back to Van Dyck, disclosure of information via blogs or platforms is often, and you could actually say always, a public strategy. Right? So these communication tools enable the performance of self to move outside of the private, to actually move into the public sphere. And we're at the point where we're beginning to think about moving academic discourse in very real, tangible, and concrete ways into the public spheres as well. And so the academy is joining this conversation, and we cannot make these spaces conform to our goals. What we ultimately have to do is work within them. And so as Jared Hauser would say, during times when alien communication is in the public domain, its status in a given public sphere is more akin to an object of discussion, a data to be interpreted, than a dialoguing intersection. It is something interacted about rather than interacted with. Right? And I think this is one of the dangers that we see as we have begun to move into the era of the MOOC, right? Is that we are taking academic discourse, we're taking academic content, and we're moving it into public spheres that have already established values. They have already established patterns of communications and tropes. And we're attempting to, in many ways, impose our discourse upon them. You know, the question becomes, how do we develop meaningful connections, meaningful lifelong connections among our learners? And not just to develop those connections, but how do we develop those connections in conjunction with the mission of the university itself, with the organization of the university? You know, we're attempting to interject an alien discourse into an already extant media. All right? There is this idea that somewhere along the way, there is a disconnect between the discourse that we are using and the media that we are using to project that discourse. All right, so let's take a look at a few more results here. Attrition. These are our MOOC values, right? We have attrition, liberating, connectors of new opportunities. They're threatening, game-changing, hyped, freedom, experimental, unrealized, blank slate, disruptive, misunderstood, impersonal, undefined, stimulating, wild. Right? So when we look at these two sets of terms that we just generated here, right, we have you know, sort of our very concrete opinions of LMSs versus our sort of wild impersonation of what's going on within the MOOC environment. And so we are at this moment of transition that we keep talking about, right? We do have the possibility of doing something extraordinary here in terms of our learning environments, and we need to make sure that we don't develop another series of closed systems, right? And what it comes down to is the availability of knowledge versus the understanding of knowledge, or to really simplify it, student reality versus pedagogical practice. Right. Our students' relationship with knowledge is changing at a very rapid rate. You know, the students that I see in my classes, they have always lived in the world of Google. Right? They've always had the ability to sit down and find the answer to the question that is before them. But of course, as educators, it's our role to teach them the process, right? To engage them in so this critical understanding. You know, as Bloom says in his taxonomy, right, the things that we aspire to are evaluation of knowledge and synthesis of knowledge, rather than simply the acquisition of knowledge, right? But you know, our students, so we need to find a way to instill that in our students, and you know, we can't certainly exclude this from the environment, the technological environment in which they've grown up, right? And we have a couple of examples here. This patron, our patron, will no longer tolerate anything more complex than a single search box and a single integrated result set. And unfortunately, our existing structures for teaching are not adequate for our current understanding of learning, which is experiential, socially constructed, and interdisciplinary. Right? So we have sort of this conflict between distributed technological practice of everyday life and centralized pedagogical environments. Right? And we find ourselves struggling in order to figure out ways of combining these two positions, right? We use tools like YouTube and Facebook and Piazza and Tumblr and Twitter, and I'm doing it today, right, within our pedagogical practice. But you know, those tools markedly contrast with, you know, our learning management systems, right? And so we need to find a way of balancing this, right? We need to ask the question of why our learning environments are not as social as they should be. And part of that is going to be civil society, sort of social practice as pedagogical environment. How do we develop sort of academic public spheres? Again, returning to Gerhard Hauser, by civil society, I refer to a network of associations independent of the state whose members, through social interactions that balance conflict and consensus, seek to regulate themselves in ways consistent with evaluation of difference. And that's fantastic, right? You know, if we could capture that in terms of our students' digital life within the institution, if we have persistent environments that allow for student interaction, then we can really go far, right? So we have our models, right? You know, here's our classic lecture model, the sage on a stage, which fortunately is beginning to go out of fashion. But our reality is often this, right? You know, we're still in our legacy classrooms, but we're surrounded by technology, right? Our students are there. They're aching to use this technology in our classrooms, right? And so we have a couple of choices here. We can go with the one person misbehaving, punish everyone. We can exclude technology from our classrooms, or we can completely embrace it, right? We're entering a world in which we have to acquire new knowledge and skills on an almost continuous basis. And our learning models don't do that. This Morton Wiley Open for Learning essay is absolutely phenomenal. If you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. And one of the things that they talk about here is this is the engagement model of our standard learning management system. We're on a 16-week cycle. By the end of the 16-week cycle, we're at our peak engagement within that learning management system. And then at the end of the semester, we drop that to zero. And then once again, peak at the end of a 16-week cycle, and we drop that to zero. It's a sawtooth model, right? And so how do we convince our students to really become engaged with these pedagogical environments when we keep, you know, literally cutting them out of them, right? You know, oftentimes our students are losing access to these pedagogical environments upon graduation. So what is their motivation, right? They see, on the other hand, you know, we see the explosion of social networks, right? We see within this explosion of social networks the creation of identity and digital footprints that are persistent, that are going to last a lifetime, that allow our students to play with their identity, to do the things that Henry Jenkins talks about in terms of participatory culture. And we exclude that from our academic environments, right? You know, so you know, we're literally obscuring our students' work. Right. According to the EDUCAUSE annual report, we've got 24 major LMS options. 5 vendors account for 94% of the market. Right. So what we need to do is find a way to talk to each other. Right. It should be much easier for our students to talk to each other. And when I say our students, I don't mean my students or our students at Tulane. I mean all of our students. Right. If I'm teaching a course on Habermas, and my students are reading one of his articles on the public sphere, then we should be able to go to our learning environments and find other institutions where other students are inevitably reading the same essay, right, and put our students in touch with those students. You know, why don't we have these persistent, massively open environments through which students can share ideas? We need to break these apart from these clusters of interest. Right, and I mentioned Jenkins just a little while ago. Right, in his white paper on participatory culture, he talks about the importance of these things. Developing affiliations, developing personal, digital, technological expression, collaborating to solve problems, the circulation of individuals and ideas through digital environments. We can think about it in terms of your Facebook profile, right? What's the relationship between the reality of your life and the portrayal of your life within Facebook? Right, there is a performance there, right, and it's a performance that's an integral part of our understanding of digital technologies, social networks, emerging media. Right, it's part of the way that we live now, right, and we need to be able to perform identity within academic environments as well. Right, we need to provide environments in which students and participants can form lifelong affiliations with either or hopefully both the university and learning. You know, how do we get this guy as excited about learning as he is about Wisconsin being in the Rose Bowl? You know, these are the sort of radical things that we need to think about. So again, back to the Mott and Wiley piece. This is so they argue because teachers often yield to the seductive appeal of a course management system, where it's easy enough to populate a weekly schedule with static resources and decontextualized tasks, which results in a focus on content rather than the process of educating the students. So where is this revolution going to come from? You know, Habermas says that, you know, this early mercantilist society allowed for these national and territorial economies to assume their shape. And we're seeing the same thing now in terms of our learning environments. We are forming new discourses in terms of academic discussion, in terms of the relationships of knowledge. So just as new technologies move the political out of the home into the public sphere, new media technologies are moving the pedagogical from the state into the public sphere. Even Jürgen Habermas himself is on Facebook. You can follow him if you like. You know, and so let's talk a little bit about evidence from academic technology and some of the things that we've been doing at Tulane. About a year ago, we ran a pilot looking at our learning management situation. We ran a pilot of Moodle for a semester, and then the next semester we piloted Blackboard 9.1, SP10, Desire to Learn, and Canvas simultaneously. We had about 10 faculty in each of these pilots and about 200 students. For our team, this was a massive undertaking. We were administering 4 learning management systems at the same time. We had faculty from various departments. We had a number of different pedagogical styles. We had self-selected faculty. They were excited about the possibility of trying out these new tools, and we made sure that they were fully trained. And when the results came in, we were a bit surprised, because the results were fairly even across the board. Here are our faculty results. You can see that, you know, really the variation in standard deviation doesn't give us a whole lot of difference here. The same thing in our student results. Our student results are even closer than our faculty results. Where it really shone was in the comments themselves. Students gravitated towards learning environment that mirrored, at least in appearance, their digital social environment. These are some of the comments. The ease of access, right? Everything was easier to find. We could actually work on group projects through the platform. And then I love this one. I believe they're basically the same, right? Which actually mirrors a lot of the comments that you guys were making in Twitter just a few minutes ago, right? So we have these fundamental concepts: communication, collaboration, and familiarity. Right? We want things that model the environments in which we already do our work. And then at the same time, we want those environments to allow us to easily communicate and easily collaborate. You know, and so we have these great discussions about content platforms and learning stacks and technological ecosystems, which are all great ways of talking about the ways in which our various technologies on campus work together. But we need to talk about building networks when, in fact, we've been talking about building systems. So just briefly, what I'd like to do is show you a project that we've been running out of Tulane by the name of Media Nola. All right. And Media Nola, this is a location and time-based exploration of all of the media sites within the New Orleans area. One of the great things about New Orleans is we do have this sort of diverse culture. We do have a great history of cinema. Obviously, we have the history of jazz and the recording that goes along with that. And so one of the things that we did, this actually began as a sort of customized media wiki installation in which students in our various courses, either history or communications, were tasked with generating histories of various media sites around the city. We've been running this project for about 6 years now, And it continues to expand. So we have more and more students coming into the system. And unlike our learning management system, their accounts within Medianola are persistent. So if they want to continue to contribute to their entries, if they want to continue to add new entries, they're welcome to do so. And then in addition to that, since we are building this within the MediaWiki sphere, we're able to collect information on how the students think about the generation of history at the same time. What sort of sources are they using and why? If a various entry needs to be rewritten, what happened in the first place that made that entry inaccurate? How did the rewrite, what information did the rewrite incorporate that made this new entry that much stronger? And so we have within this the ability to search by date and search by media site. So, if I want to see places where people were playing jazz in New Orleans between 1920 and 1935, I can set my sliders there and go to it. But one of the things that that we've then done is taken this information and moved it into yet another sphere of communication through New Orleans Historical. So the New Orleans Historical site, if it loads, here we go, is an Omeka site that draws directly on the information that's available to us within our Medianola repository. So now we don't just have the students engaging with media sites around New Orleans. We don't just have the students engaging with the archives at Tulane and generating these various entries. Now they have to think about these entries in terms of the context of the city, and not just the physical spread of where these locations are within the city, but what an individual who is interested in learning something about New Orleans would like to see within a series of stops, right? And so we have then the ability to pull this information into New Orleans Historical. If you find yourself in New Orleans, please by all means download the app. The tours are all there for you. They'll lead you through the various stops that the students have put together. All right, and so we have taken a persistent environment for the students, and our students at Tulane develop a very strong affiliation with the city of New Orleans. All right, and so we've taken that relationship, made it persistent, leveraged their interest in what's going on in the city around them, and then used that as a means of developing their thoughts on urban planning and layout, their thoughts on the generation of history, their thoughts on cultural communication, how cultural communication have changed over time, and so forth. So this gives them an environment that they can share, that they can play in. Medianola itself has become a very strong repository for information about New Orleans. When I find myself researching topics on New Orleans, more often than not, one of the first hits will be a media article, Medianola article I wasn't even aware existed. Right? So I find myself being linked back to our own project on some of the work that our students have done. Great. All right. So this is, and this is just sort of the beginning. And so our MOOC's the answer, right? Our MOOC's going to solve our problem of the sage on the stage. Are they going to sort of give us more context? In this environment, what does our future look like? And one of the things that we have to balance, this is the power plant from the Matrix. Again, we need to think about where academic discourse is going to sit. What is that relationship between the virtualization of academic discourse and the reality of the world that surrounds us, of the social practice that surrounds us, right? How do we balance the reality of something like the city of New Orleans with the desire to move into these more virtualized environments? I would like to give a shout out to Jeff Borden, who did an excellent session here at EDUCAUSE through Pearson, who has designed augmented reality games for his students that sort of take operate in the same way that our Medianola project operates, but it takes it to a whole other level. For instance, he ran a project where day one of the class, the professor is murdered, and the rest of the class is dealt with the forensics, the trial, the reporting. So we have students from communications doing the journalism reporting on the case. We have pre-law students actually doing voir dire on the jurors who are also students. We have students in the forensics, the study of forensics, looking at the forensics that have been generated for the body and so forth, right? So we're talking about interactive and cross-disciplinary environments. All right, so what's your solution? Tech, what strategies do you use to make learning social, right? How can we begin to expand these things? You know, we need, right out of the gate, sort of open network learning environments. Again, as I said earlier, we're thinking about systems, and we need to be thinking about networks. I think our colleague, all of our colleague here at EDUCAUSE, Gardner Campbell, put it very well when he said that what we need is an understanding augmentation network rather than a learning management system, right? We need an environment that is going to build these profound connections among individuals, that's going to allow them to tap into the knowledge, right, to tap into the answers, while at the same time helping them to understand the process by which we arrive at these answers. I mean, I teach, in addition to communications theory, I teach modern poetry, and there's always a problem teaching students to read poetry now. So, well, what are we reading? We're reading The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock. Well, I can go to the Wikipedia page on J. Alfred Prufrock and get a pretty good understanding of what's going on in this piece of poetry. Or if not a good understanding, what I can get a nice synopsis of the major critical articles on this piece of poetry. But what that doesn't teach them is how to generate meaning from the act of reading, right? What is the nature of a close reading of a piece of poetry? How is this level of understanding generated? And of course, we can apply this to any field. This is just one of the things that I struggle with, right? When the answer is there, then how do we put emphasis back on the process? Right. So do we bring the outside in, right? That's one of the concerns about MOOCs, right? Do we see a dilution of academic discourse, how do we make sure that we maintain the benefits of the university environment? Do we bring the inside out? Most certainly, through public service efforts. We've been doing a lot with that at Tulane. We look at the viability of our pedagogical models. We try to make sure that our students engage with the community around them, right? That they're not just isolated within the environment. And then finally, ultimately, we need to make the inside matter, right? We need simple, elegant solutions for our learners. We need environments for our learners that mirror the environments, the public spheres that they're used to, that allow them to have persistent digital footprints, that allow them to carry the academic discourse that we struggle so hard to teach them to generate forward with them as they progress through life. All right, so let's take a look at and this will be a nice segue. Let's take a look at some of your solutions. We have two solutions: leveraging existing social networking tools for learning, and we think that MOOCs are likely to perpetuate the sage on a stage until we engage socially. Right? Yeah, absolutely. So excellent points. We see then this development of ideas from, our dissatisfaction with our traditional learning management environments forward. Okay. Well, that's what I have for you today. I think we've got just about the right amount of time for Q&A, so we can open that up.
Your example project seems to have less to do with MOOCs or LMSs and more to do with having students contribute to an open resource. How does Media NOLA relate to a learning environment, whether open or closed? And then she says, to clarify, this project seems more about transcending semester boundaries rather than really addressing open versus closed or large versus small courses, and that's a whole different revolution.
Sure, thank you. Thank you for the question. The project itself, I mentioned it here in that the Media NOLA platform becomes a learning environment through our use of it in the classroom, right? It's a space, it's a social space by which the students are able to engage with these materials, collaborate with one another, and construct. And so, yes, while MediaNola is not necessarily a learning management system or a platform for deploying a MOOC, it does become a very strong environment for the generation of personal identity, personal understanding of social spaces on a larger platform. And it does sort of break that sawtooth model that we were talking about in terms of the learning management system.
I'm curious how you see the students' engagement with the social networks transferring into their engagement with more traditional forms of academic discourse, peer-reviewed journals, things like that.
Sure. Well, again, you know, we have this idea, or at least I think, that we would like to see academic discourse become considerably more social than it already is. And we're very good at being social already, just not necessarily in the academy, right? You know, our students are fantastic within their, you know, particularly when you look at the example of Facebook, right? I mean, it's an unbelievable success, right, that generates a tremendous amount of information about the ways in which we interact. And hopefully, with MOOCs, we're going to be able to begin to generate that same kind of information about academic environments. But we can take it so much further than that, right? If I have a persistent digital identity that follows me you know, through my academic life, it doesn't necessarily even have to start at the university level. If what I'm doing through my academics is constantly being contributed to this digital identity, then, well, first of all, I'm going to care about it much more. Right, and then sort of my own academic journey is going to be available to my peers. It's going to be up for scrutiny. I'm going to be more likely to find people who are interested in the same research topics that I'm interested in, and so forth. Right, we could begin to talk about collaboration at a whole different level.
Yeah. Which platform would you have gone with if not MediaNola?
Which platform for MediaWiki, maybe? well, in terms of the learning management systems, Tulane, we're still with Blackboard. We've been working to make Blackboard that much more social for our students and that much more persistent. You know, inevitably, though, we find ourselves moving out of the learning management systems as well to platforms like WordPress and to platforms like MediaWiki, platforms that will allow a bit more persistence, and honestly, platforms where we can allow students more control over the development of the platform at the same time. Right? WordPress can be an incredibly powerful tool, especially when students are granted sort of limited administration rights, where they can begin to take over the space and make it their own. Right? What do you see as necessary for your success in this class, and how do you bring that?
So I'd like to ask you to go back to the teaching poetry
Sure.
question. And I actually have two tied together questions on that one. So the first one is that given that's the truth of the environment in which you're working, what are your strategies for dealing with it, for taking students who can get, you know, the right answers on Wikipedia and walking them to a place where there's an internal process? But then kind of the meta question is, how do you make the case for the fact that that internal process is desirable when the answer is right there? Because I think that question cuts to the heart of so much of the tension that we're facing right now.
Sure. And that's a very excellent question. So I'll do the easy part first, right, which would be sort of my personal strategies. And there is, quite frankly, a lot of hand-holding involved. You know, particularly in the teaching of literature, and particularly in the teaching of literature from a close reading perspective. So really that becomes a matter of tailoring one's assignments around the resources that are available to the students, right? Also, it means that I become an expert on the SparkNotes description of the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock, the Wikipedia description of J. Alfred Prufrock, and so forth. All right, you know, so when we see our students slipping into these sort of worn tracks, we can divert them away from them. But then it does also entail putting folks in a room or in a learning environment and making them actually consider the poem or whatever it is that we're talking about piece by piece, right? What is the meaning here, right? Rather than just, you know, reading a chunk of text and then having someone describe what's going on in that chunk of text, you know, actually looking for how these individual components fit together to construct that meaning. Now, in terms of whether or not that's important, that's a whole other beast, right? You know, and some of our students might argue that it's not, right? And that this is part of this generational gap that we see in academic discourse. I think that we could make a strong argument for it being significant, you know, in that, well, someone has to do the interpretation, right? Someone has to do the work. The advancement of academic discourse isn't stopping. I mean, that's one of the things that makes academic discourse so fantastic, right, is that we're continually learning new things. We're continually refining our processes and our models. And in order to do that, we have to have the critical skills to look at the models under which we currently operate, right? You know, models are great, but when we become sort of attached to them, then they can blind us towards some of the other possibilities that are out there. And so it's a matter of getting our students to, you know, even if they're not accepting perhaps our processes, the way that we learn to think about these individual things, challenging them to build their own critical models for engaging these text ideas, theories, and so forth, I think is what's really important.
I noticed as we talk about this, there's this kind of discussion of the academic model and how we work within academia, and then the public sphere and how we work within the public sphere. And, you know, at some point they are going to leave academia. Well, some of them might stay in it for the rest of their lives. But at some point, a lot of them will leave academia, and then it becomes this issue of retranslating or, you know, undoing academia. Because, I mean, I've heard a lot of instances where people say, well, I had to teach my employees not to write a 5-paragraph essay for everything that was, you know, every time I asked them to write something. And so to what degree have you found ways to take what is already in the public sphere and make that part of the curriculum? Like, for example, as opposed to, you know, not just kind of being aware of what's in Wikipedia, perhaps making that part of the dialogue and saying, you know, hey, we're going to read this. This is what Wikipedia says. How might you change this? How might you, I mean, because yeah. Wikipedia isn't necessarily another world, and the public sphere isn't another world. It is the world.
Yeah.
And academia, in a lot of ways, is kind of an island that, you know, you get formed into and then have to get unformed out of, because it really is not a model for how the real world works in so many ways.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, finding a way to take things like Twitter and those social media discussions and making them part of the class seems like it would be something that would be essential.
And that's something that, you know, to speak to your Wikipedia example right off, that is something that we have done in my classes, is to either edit Wikipedia pages of the bits of poetry that we've discussed, or actually generate Wikipedia pages for bits of poetry that where they don't exist yet. And of course, the fun thing about that particular exercise is then watching them get savaged by the Wikipedia folks behind the scenes. You know, you end up with a 3-page submission that gets cut down to a paragraph and a half. This may have been a significant poem, the end, right? I think what needs to happen, right, is that we need to, you know, as we adapt our tools and as we adapt our environments, I think that we're going to see academic discourse and the discourse of the public sphere actually coming together more in significant ways, right? And that's one of the things that you know, I think Hauser and Habermas are sort of getting at here in terms of their discussion of the development of the public sphere in the first place, right? If we have the opportunity to take the social practice that our students are using in the real world, you know, in their own cultural practice, and then engage with that within the academic world, within the academic sphere, then we're going to see more of that everyday cultural practice coming into the academy. Right, and hopefully beginning to challenge some of the models that we're using in the academy. Right, you know, there's nothing that says, you know, the 5-paragraph essay was a great example of that. Right, you know, fortunately we've begun to move away from that, but you know, it's still something that it's a specter sort of haunting the way that we think about discourse. But you know, so the form of expression is perhaps less significant than what is the content of the expression itself. Right? And in the presentation, when I was talking about the idea of alien discourse within the public sphere, right? The five-paragraph essay is a great example of that. You know, once you're out of the academy, the five-paragraph essay is alien discourse within the public sphere. And that's our challenge, really, is to begin to adopt our academic practice so that it is an alien discourse. Because if it is, you know, as Habermas and Hauser say, it becomes talked about rather than actually considered. Right, it's just it's something where the content does not matter because the form is unrecognizable to contemporary social practice. And so as we see those two beginning to merge, and hopefully as we work towards merging those things, you know, the possibilities are remarkable. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? I think we're just about out of time. So thank you folks very much. And thank you for getting up with me this morning. This is a...